Right then, brace yourself. Welcome to this Season 10, Episode 32 of the Ubuntu Podcast. In this episode, we're going to discuss the New York Ubuntu Rally. We'll also have some command line love and we'll go over your feedback. I'm Martin, and joining me this week are Mark.
Hello.
Hello there. Are you well?
I am well, yes.
Good.
I have been a bit unwell, but now I am well again.
I'm glad to hear you're recovered. And Alan.
Yo, 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 homies.
Hi, what have you been up to, Alan?
I have been playing Wi-Fi Wars.
And what's
what now?
That?
Yes. So, Wi-Fi Wars is a couple of guys who travel around doing events on stage where they set up a wireless access point in the room and they have a projector and you are all encouraged to play massively multiplayer games with them that happen on the screen in front of you. And all the people in the audience get their mobile phone out and they connect to the Wi-Fi and they play these games. And they're mostly fairly simple games like Pong and stuff, where you, with Pong, you collectively as a team vote whether to move the paddle up or down in order to hit the thing. And other games like, there's one where there's a bomb that gets passed around and you have to pass it on to the next person and stuff, a bit like Pass the Parcel. And there's a 3D Wolfenstein type thing as well, where you move around in 3D and shoot people and stuff. But there's a whole bunch of these little mini games and you just go to their website while you're sat in the audience and play the game with them. And if you take a selfie, then at the start of when you join the game, then they might put that on the screen so that, you know, they can point and laugh at whoever won or lost that round. But they've now started doing it online. So you go to their website at a particular time on a particular day that they announce on Twitter and all that, and you watch them and you participate remotely. So you get your phone out and you go to the website and you play the games remotely and you watch the stream and it's good fun. It's more interactive than just sitting and passively watching someone play a game, because you actually participate and you play the game as well. It's really good.
Interesting.
It's really good. The presenters, one of them is Steve McNeil, who is one of the team captains on Dave TV's Dar O'Brien's Go 8-Bit TV program. And the other guy is Rob. I can't pronounce his last name, Sedgebeer, I think. And I think he wrote the games, but it's quite cool because they beam the games from their little server to you. And yeah, you get to vote on stuff and that affects how many points you get and stuff. So I think Wi-Fi Wars is kind of has fed in some ways into the Go 8-Bit thing that's on TV. There's certain elements of the live show and the stream that are actually in the TV program. So yeah, it's quite cool.
Excellent.
That was an awkward silence. Yeah, I think we should.
Now, my wonderful co-hosts have been quite busy of recent. After visiting UbuCon in Paris, they then flew off to New York for another Ubuntu community event. This time it was the Ubuntu Rally in New York City. So, guys, why don't you tell us a bit about what is an Ubuntu Rally? Is it the same thing as an UbuCon or was it a different kind of event?
No, it's more like an Ubuntu Developer Summit from the past, where you go to get stuff done. It's kind of halfway between an Ubuntu Developer Summit and a company sprint. So company sprints we have periodically, where a chunk of the company, some of the company, go to a particular place so you can all sit around together and work together. Because sometimes it's just more efficient to all be in the same place and work, because, you know, we're a remote company. So sometimes it's just good to be in the same place to work. And this is like that on a massive scale. There's like 200 canonical people there, plus a whole bunch of community people there.
Yeah.
Getting stuff done.
So was this organized by Canonical or was this a community organized thing?
No,
right.
It's a Canonical thing rather than an UbuCon. You can think of as a community organized event, and the Rally and UDSs of the past were Canonical organized, and they're
okay.
They cost a ton of money to make, to set up. So then that's why they're not community run.
Okay. So other than you guys, who was there?
Well, there was representation from all of the engineering and design teams at Canonical. So all of the server cloud devices and IoT and design teams were there working on MAS and Juju and server and kernel and cloud and all of the orchestration tools, everything to do with that side of things. And then there was also the desktop team and the Snap team and the Snapcraft team and some community and ISV guests as well. So quite a broad collection of people.
Right. So the people who there who weren't actual Canonical employees, how did they get to go along? Were they specially invited, or could anyone just rock up if they knew it was going on?
It was by invite, because it was very specifically a get stuff done kind of event. We didn't want to just open the doors to any random in New York City to come into the hotel and, you know, eat all our food.
I can see why that might go wrong.
Right. And disrupt what was going on. We actually wanted people who were going to come along and get stuff done. And so we hand selected a bunch of people who we thought would be interesting and brainstormed within the company. And we came up with quite a big list, but we only had budget to invite about 20. Unfortunately, we could have invited probably 50 or 60, and some of the people just weren't available as well.
I think we did invite close to 50 to 60, and, you know, a number of people weren't able to attend for various reasons. Yeah,
that's right.
And the other reason for having a finite list of guests is, although we pretty much took over the hotel for a week, in fact, it's not just for a week, that the event is continuing with different groups. So this week, as we record this, it's a sales sprint that's happening there. So all of the sales teams are there for a week doing whatever sales do. And the week after that, it's a product sprint where for all of the product development managers, you know, figuring out what their strategy is going to be for subsequent releases of their products in the future. So that hotel's being occupied by Canonical for 3 weeks. And although we've taken over all of this floor space, the rooms are a finite size. So we couldn't just open the doors, you know, to the street and just invite people in, because we simply couldn't accommodate everybody. So that was why we had a finite list. But we had a very interesting group of people there working alongside us, and it was absolutely fascinating.
Cool. So let's start specifically with you guys. What did the two of you actually do in terms of getting things done while you were there?
So for some of the week, I was spent with some of the community people, helping them get past some blockages that they had, like, for example, in building snaps for elementary OS. We had two of the guys there from elementary, and we were trying to make it really easy for their developers, as in people who create apps for elementary, to be able to create snaps of their applications really easily. Because right now, the way you create apps on elementary is you make them a deb and you put them in this special place and they appear in the elementary app center.
Right.
And, you know, debs, we've acknowledged over the years, are somewhat difficult to make. And if you're an app developer, you want to focus on your app, and the packaging is like secondary. So we want to make it easy for them to deliver apps with snaps. And so we were sat with Daniel and Cody and Ken from the desktop team in order to work out how we can make it super easy for their developers to package their applications for elementary.
And is that with a view to snaps basically being the primary packaging format, as opposed to another packaging format as well as debs, which go into the elementary store?
So we certainly had those kind of conversations, but that's really up to the elementary guys to make that decision, because it's, you know, it's their distro. They choose what the user experience is going to be like. Mm-hmm. But if they were ever going to go down that road, there's work we needed to do to make it easy. Yeah. Like if they put snaps in there on day one, like right now, the experience wouldn't be great. And that's why we had to work on making all of the machinery that makes snaps as smooth as possible, so that we can kind of head in that rough direction, but we're not saying they have to deliver snaps. That's their decision. You know, they choose how they want to deliver apps to their store. to their users. So I spent a significant amount of time last week with them. And interestingly, we also had Scarlett from the KDE project, who mm-hmm. was like a machine cranking out snaps of KDE applications.
Oh, wow.
Like I get an email every time a new snap goes in the store, and all week there was just email after email of KDE apps going in the store. And it was brilliant because she had a four-way terminal on her screen at all times, and she was snapping like four different things at the same time. It was just fantastic. It was really great to see. But whenever she had a problem, there were people nearby who could help. She was in the Snapcraft room, and there were Snapcraft developers in the room, and me and Martin were always around. And it was really, really great to work through the issues that they have packaging snaps so that we could get that stuff working.
Yeah.
So, I barely left the Snapcraft room last week. So Scarlett had come pre-armed with a list of gotchas that she'd run into as she'd been creating snaps, which I went through with her, and then we got the appropriate developers in the room with her so that they could understand what the issues were that, you know, she'd run into, and then improvements and fixes are then being made in either SnapD or Snapcraft to accommodate the particular use cases that they have. So that's, you know, one of the outcomes of holding this event is improving the developer experience so that the next person that comes along and uses this stuff, there's less friction and it's easier to get done what you want to do.
And that's actually what we spend a lot of our time doing, is speaking to developers, trying to figure out, you know, how does this work for you and how does it not work? Because the Snapcraft developers and the Snap developers are building the tools that they think developers need. And sometimes we speak to a developer and they say, well, you know, it would be great if it did this, or it'd be great if it didn't do this. Mm-hmm. And so we pass that feedback to the Snap and Snapcraft developers to get that stuff known to them and on their roadmap.
Yeah.
Cool. So aside from what you two guys were specifically working on, is there anything which you saw or heard about which was particularly cool that was going on?
I think Martin spent a lot of time with some external invited guests. I don't know how much you can talk about that.
Well, we can say who was there. I think that's a matter of sort of public knowledge now. So some of our guests included developers from Visual Studio Code and Skype and Slack and Electron and companies like Heroku and Google. And Node developers and Electron developers. So there was a whole bunch of work going on there for people working with Electron applications or Electron itself to actually streamline the process of creating snaps of Electron applications. So Mark Lee, who's an upstream Electron Forge developer, had access to upstream Electron developers who'd attended the event, plus our Snapcraft teams and our Snap teams. So he's creating Snap support in Electron Forge to make it a really simple process to create snaps of Electron applications.
So all of those applications that you mentioned just now, are those all built with Electron?
Those are all built with Electron, yes.
Right. And so this will be like right in the sort of the build environment for Electron apps to spit out as one of the options.
That's the thing. At the moment, like, people might use Snapcraft, and Snapcraft is a meta build system that can pull in your project. So if your project is maybe CMake, Snapcraft knows how to build a CMake project. Or if your project is Python, it knows what to do with a Python 2 or Python 3 application. But it makes more sense if Snapcraft, or the ability to create snaps, is further up the pipeline, so that a developer who is already building their thing with whatever tool it is, and in this case Martin's talking about Electron, but it could be anything, whatever tool they're using to spit out packages of their application, it makes sense if there was like a plugin or a capability to spit out snaps as well. Because if you know, that becomes a no-brainer. If they can already spit out DMGs and shove those in the Mac store, and they can spit out MSIs or whatever and shove those in the Windows store, why not also spit out snaps and shove that in the Snap store?
You know, and so, for example, there were guys there who work exclusively on Node, and they reviewed the Snapcraft plugins for Node to basically say whether it was doing the right thing that a Node developer would expect to happen. And it turned out it mostly was, but it wasn't ideal. So that's been improved, and it works so much better now, because I actually snapped a Node application today in about 40 seconds, and about four lines of, you know, YAML. It's become much, much simpler to do.
Ooh.
So again, that's like one of the benefits of having people who are domain experts all in the room together to sort of, you know, glue this together in a better way. And then we've mentioned that we had, you know, Elementary and KDE there. There were also guys from GNOME and Wayland there working alongside the desktop team. And Ikey from Solus was also a guest working on adding Snap support to the Solus Software Center. And he gave a very well-received lightning talk on the last day of the rally. And got a round of applause from everyone at Canonical, which was great to see.
Oh, great. So if people want to sort of know more about what went on, were there talks which are publicly recorded or blog posts or anyone podcasting or anything at the event?
We didn't record any of the lightning talks. They happened every morning. There were like three or four lightning talks that happened. We didn't record any of those, but Chris Fisher and Noah Chalaya from Jupiter Broadcasting were there, and they have recorded interviews with a whole bunch of people, and they also have done a couple of vlogs of what it was like. We'll link to one of them that Chris put out, which is kind of his overview of what was going on there. It's only a short video, but that's certainly worth watching if you want to get a feel for what the rooms were like we were in, and you know,
the scale of it, and you know what a room looks like where it's got a bunch of random developers in there trying to, you know, get to know each other and work together.
It's funny because we don't get together as a company that often. Like, we typically say four times a year, but it's not always that often, and especially you don't get together with that many people in the company. You think we're all remote, and there were 200 people in that place. It was great to be able to, you know, go and walk into a room and say, ah, I need to speak to him, and just have a conversation and get a thing done and walk out. And in past jobs where I would work with people and be in the same room as them, you just turn around and you take it for granted you can have a conversation with people. And, you know, we can use IRC or Slack or Mumble or whatever to, or Hangouts to talk to people, but it's really different when you're all in the same space. And it also helps reinforce the team when you're all like having breakfast together, having lunch together, then maybe going out and socializing in the evening as well. It really, really helps to like build that camaraderie in the company as well.
There was an example of having, you know, different people in the room together paying off. We were talking about Scarlett creating snaps of KDE applications, and Alan and one of the desktop developers, Ken Van Dyne, were working with the Elementary guys. And they were trying to use these platform snaps. So there's a common sort of runtime that each of the Elementary apps connects to. So the actual application snaps are quite small. And they were the size of tens of megabytes in size. And Scarlett was talking about how she was doing things. And I was thinking, yes, I remember something about this as I overheard this conversation, and then spoke to one of our other colleagues called Sergio. And he was like, oh, yes, if you use this feature. So then we feed that back. And then this app that they were snapping for an Elementary, which was about 10 megabytes, the next iteration of it was 136K. And it was like, this is a win. And then that kicked off this whole initiative throughout the rest of the week on the GNOME snaps to put them on a diet and use this same technique over and over and over again to considerably shrink the size of all of these application snaps. And it was just that, you know, moment of having four people in the room that all had a piece of information and were able to just connect it very quickly and make a positive change as a result.
Right. Well, I think that's probably all we've got time for this episode. So let's look forward to the next Ubuntu rally whenever it happens. And thanks very much, guys.
If you love the command line as much as we do, send us a command that will blow our minds, and we might even mention it on the show. Send your command line love to show@ubuntupodcast.org.
This week's command line love is something I discovered last week, and it's called Pulse Mixer. And it is, if you think of Pavu Control or any of the graphical ways in which you can adjust the volume of individual sources and devices and you know, manipulate the levels on your system, there's usually a graphical thing that does that. Pulse Mixer is a command line version. So you can think of Pulse Mixer as being like ALSA Mixer.
Yeah.
But for Pulse.
Right.
And it's super easy. You can install it very easily. It's a snap install Pulse Mixer, and then just run Pulse Mixer. And you get a little window with some pretty graphics for the sliders for each of your devices, and it dynamically updates. So if you run Pulse Mixer and you plug in a new device like a microphone or a pair of headphones or something, the display changes, and it uses similar keyboard shortcuts. It's got a built-in help thing, but it's just a really, really nice way to very quickly and easily adjust your audio levels and mixer settings directly from the command line.
If you're doing something on a Raspberry Pi that needs audio and it's headless, this is a great tool for that.
Cool.
That's it. Pulse Mixer. It's awesome.
There's always room for more feedback. On our website, each episode has its own comments, so post yours on ubuntupodcast.org.
And now it's time for your wonderful feedback. And first up, Will left a comment on our website, ubuntupodcast.org, in response to episode 29.
Martin sounds almost happy about the future demise of Purism. I know people have accused them of being a scam in the past, but I haven't followed it enough to know if they are naive or nefarious. But they do seem to draw a lot of attention to the goal of running an only open source software. So it'll be sad to see them go. So that episode that I sounded happy, I was sat in a room with all of my friends, and we were having a bit of a giggle about a raft of things. So it was more jovial attitude at the time rather than joy at seeing a company fail. But I'm not a Purism apologist. I do have concerns about how they conduct themselves and their business model. But I do wish them every success with their campaign, and it does seem to be going very well at the moment. It does seem to be trending up sharply enough that they may well hit their goal. Yeah, so
it is actually on track, isn't it?
It's just shy of a million right now.
Wow.
Looking at it right now. And the graph is kind of pointing in the right direction. It's a very strange, lumpy graph. It's not like any crowdfunder I have ever seen. It's very weird. It's very consistent, and most crowdfunders don't seem to be that kind of consistent. Ooh. It's very weird.
It's not weirdly consistent like the indie one was really consistent, is it?
The indie one?
Yeah.
I don't know what you mean by the indie one.
No, ind.ie. That sort of appeared to be going up at a fairly consistent rate and had some very interesting JavaScript in the page that showed the total.
Oh, no. Oh, I remember that now. Yes. No, it's just I've been looking at the and plotting the growth of it, and it's just a weird line. And I it seems like they're getting consistent, constant people backing at the multi-$100 level. And it's just a constant flow, which is great because it looks very much like they're going to hit their target. It's just it just looks bizarre compared to all other crowdfunders I've ever seen.
And just goes to demonstrate, what do I know? Because I think in that same podcast, I predicted they'd get to like 25% funding.
Right.
And they've already surpassed 66%, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Next up, Elio Campitelli left a comment on our website in response to our conversation about drinking your own champagne.
He says, I think it should be obvious that the presentation is not limited to the slides you show, but that it's a complete performance that involves the visual support, the audio, and also the context of the event. A Gesamtkunstwerk, I think, or something like that in German, I don't know, if you will. In many situations, which software you're using to project images on the screen is inconsequential, but in others, it's a very important part. If you're talking about how a tool is used for making slides, for example, then the tool used for making your slides is definitely part of the presentation, and you should think about it. Not only that, but the audience would be justified in doubting the merits of a software that even its proponents don't use for what it's supposedly good for. Fair point.
Wise words.
And William Wellis emailed us to show@ubuntupodcast.org.
I listened to a recent episode where the subject of negativity in the community came up. Using Linux can be like a drug, and it's wonderful, but it can take a while for the high to wear off. and you can become an arse to everyone around you in that time. But as your high ends, someone else's begins.
Mm.
It's an unusual analogy. I think some people are just arses.
Okay.
Stephen Bingham tweeted at Ubuntu Podcast.
RE Zemlin controversy. I'm relaxed. Do we criticize Apple execs for not using airport routers, when giving their presentations? I think they probably do, don't they? Well, I don't know. Oh, I guess
they have at a conference center.
Yes, in a conference center, I would imagine they use corporate stuff that they don't know, and we don't, and we wouldn't see it even if they did.
Presumably, if they were presenting specifically about their new airport router, they would have one of the airport routers there and show what it did.
Right, but. But I don't know.
No, we wouldn't say if you extol the virtues of Apple, you then every piece of hardware you connect to must be Apple.
Right. Well, some might think that.
Tom Ormiston tweeted,
"Do you think we need more apps, for example, GIMP, taught in schools to shape minds beyond Adobe? Public money for public code?"
It would be lovely, but schools and colleges and unis choose the applications they teach purely based on what employers use and therefore expect students to have. So if more companies used free software, then schools would teach free software, basically.
Yeah, it's simplistic, but yeah, I think you're right.
And Lanber Danus also tweeted.
You asked if the Apple community is rude to each other. Look up iOS versus macOS war. Oh, crikey. Do I want to look that up?
No.
They are rude to each other. Is the conclusion from that? I don't know. I can't imagine looking that up and seeing people throwing flowers at each other. I would imagine.
Throwing iPhones at one another.
Well, maybe.
Yeah. Or one side is throwing iPhones and the other side is throwing iMacs. Anyway, yes, that's all for your feedback for this week.
And that's all for episode 32, as I notice my colleagues trying to trip me up by writing 31 in the show notes. We'll be back next week when we'll have more news, comment and discussion.
We will.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, until then.
You lost four words.
We need to line up some more interviews. I think we haven't done any interviews or given away any laptops recently. We should do more of that.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And relax.